Welcome to MoneyMD, where the money doctors are in the house. We're giving out prescriptions for better financial health and making smart decisions with your money. We give common sense solutions to your complex problems. And now, here are the doctors.
Well, Justin, it's been quite a week. We're coming off of March Madness. We're heading into Masters. We just left March. Any other M words for me today?
M words. No, I think you got them all.
All right. Well, yeah, we have a good show today, but coming into Masters week, it's here in Augusta. This is the Christmas of Augusta.
It's the best time of year around town. There's a lot of buzz going on.
Spring, and it's just, you know, it's like you go outside and it's actually warm and you start feeling good, and it's a fun time. A lot of stores and homes looking prime
pristine
shape.
Yeah, pristine.
So it's a good time and to be here, and I don't know, but I'm a March Madness fan, so it's fun to watch that with my kids. And it's not quite, I know you're a college football fan.
Yeah, that's right.
A little different.
A little different. And, you know, my Noles weren't in the tournament this year, so it was hard, to stay tuned in. But, yeah, great tournament this year, and looking forward to Masters.
Yes. By the way, I'm Zach Albanese. I'm a certified financial planner. I've been in the industry for almost 5 years and have been at Richard Young Associates for 3.
Yeah, and my name's Justin. I'm also an advisor here at the firm, and I'm coming up on my 1 year mark.
Yeah, we're excited to have you listen to the show today. We've got some good articles we'll be digging into. The first one we'll talk about is wealth transfer. How most people think about wealth transfer as like just financial, but we're going to talk a little bit more about how to transfer wealth more relationally, which is an interesting, different topic. And then, Justin, what do you got for us?
Yeah, then we have an article from the Wall Street Journal just talking about folks that are going to be retiring before 65 and what that looks like as far as your healthcare options. So two good articles this week. Excited for it.
Yeah, and you know, we're up exclusively every week up on Fridays. You can find our show on our website, your favorite podcast app. You can go to moneymd.net, check us out. What's also good about the show is you can go back and listen to archive shows and find topics that are relevant for your situation or something you're interested in. Tune in, and we're up every week, and we enjoy doing this and field in some questions, which we'll get into in a little bit here. But we're excited for the show, and let's kick it off, Justin, with the financial fact of the week.
Yeah, this is a good one, Zach. It's talking about the job market. So I don't know if you've ever thought of this, but if you've thought about your grandparents and if they could do your job today, or even a job that your kid may do, and you're like, I don't think they could probably handle that.
Yeah.
So about 6 out of every 10 jobs that people have today didn't exist in 1940.
That is interesting.
Yeah, and that comes from a study by an economist at MIT, and that was led in 2018. So obviously the job market is changing across the U.S. and the world, and people are working from home now, and that wasn't the case in 1940. So
yeah, it makes you think, what jobs will we do in 40 years that we don't do today?
I'm certain the AI
robot maintenance.
Something will AI related.
An AI technician.
Yeah, that's right. Right.
Yeah, I guess we'll wait and see. We'll tune in 40 years from now, and we'll keep you posted on that. Very good financial fact. Interesting, absolutely, how fast job markets change and how technology changes things. And so now we're going to get into our first article about wealth transfer. And this is from Kiplinger, and it was an interesting article because, like I said earlier, most of the times we think about wealth transfer, it's purely financial, and we'll get into that a little bit. But really, nearly every article on the Great Wealth Transfer discusses how the Silent Generation or Baby Boomers are poised to transfer, check this number out, $84.4 trillion in assets through 2045, with $72.6 trillion going directly to their heirs. And this is according to a Cerulli Associates. But how the ultra-wealthy perceive wealth could have implications for others, because many goods and services, initially exclusive luxuries for the ultra-wealthy, so if you think about it, things like electricity, indoor plumbing, refrigeration, which were luxuries at one time for wealthy people, are now things that are taken for granted by the wider population. So now how the ultra-wealthy think about wealth today is going to shape how the broader society thinks about wealth in the future. And so in the book, Complete Family Wealth, the authors recount a wise grandma's saying, and she said, "Our family has always been rich, and sometimes we've had money." And so richness, being rich, is not just a financial thing. And so this statement really encapsulates a perspective long held in ultra-wealthy circles, now reaching wider audiences, that true wealth for an individual lies in their well-being. True wealth is really a flourishing family unit and not just some financial number.
Yeah, that's right. And you guys may be wondering how this may apply to your own family, right? And in the book, Complete Family Wealth, it provides a framework, the five forms of a family capital, which we'll modify slightly here for more actionable approach.
Yes.
When it comes to wealth transfer just beyond money, right? That's what we're trying to understand here. Additional insights can be gleaned from organizations like the Ultra High Net Worth, or UHNW
Institute. Yeah, I'm a
Institute.
Part of that institute.
Yeah, I mean, I heard you were like president or something.
Yeah, I founded it. Okay.
And ideas such as the Wealth 3.0, which is a way of thinking about wealth beyond just simple money. So,
yep.
Zach, if you want to get us started, we're going to talk about a couple of the explanations of each of these forms of capital, along with examples of economical and generous ways to implement each of them.
That's right. Yeah, the first one is a cultural capital. And so think about things like what reflects your family's shared values, you know, your purpose, your values, your roles. An economical way to practice this is to, you know, order pizza, grab some scrap paper, dedicate maybe a Friday night to drafting a personal household or family vision. Total family management states that if family is the most important thing to all of us, why aren't we acting like it? And they define vision as purpose plus values plus roles. I think that's a pretty good way to think about that.
Right.
Purpose plus values plus roles. And they say, don't worry about getting it perfect, just start. That's a fun way to kind of engage developing a cultural capital within your family. And a generous thing to do is to arrange a family retreat and maybe bring in an external facilitator, combining vacation elements with sessions to refine individual household family vision. So bringing in somebody, if you want to spend a little money to develop this part of your family identity, bring someone in, help facilitate it. And that could be a good way to help your family transfer that cultural capital beyond the years.
Yeah, that's right. And the second example here is on the human capital side. So we're trying to promote the physical and mental health of our family members. So economically speaking, we're talking about taking a family walk or maybe a hike without the phones.
Yeah,
without
the phones.
Yeah. This is a simple way to enjoy one another's company and benefit of exercise. I know my wife and I have been trying to walk around the neighborhood each night. And,
yeah, it's free.
Yeah, it's been great.
It's a free way to get exercise, enjoy one another. Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. And from a generous perspective, enroll in a fitness class together. I know CrossFit's a big deal.
Yeah.
Spin classes, boot camp, those sort of things. And if you have a family elder who can sponsor, that's even better, obviously, to include them rather as well. This is a fun way to emphasize the value of physical health.
Yeah, I think that's super good, engaging physically as a family. We know we've had folks before, clients that they run together or, things like biking, CrossFit, hiking, doing things like that regularly as a family. It really passes on the DNA of the importance of physical fitness and physically engaging with one another. The next one is social capital. So think of social capital, things that strengthen a family's relationships and their ability to make decisions together. So something that's cheap, economical, you could start a family book club. You can do a family movie night. alternating choices among members. I know with little kids, we do family movie night every Friday night, and it's always a battle which movie we're going to watch. Because, you know, we range from 9 down to 4, and, you know, there's different movie decisions. This is probably better when your kids are grown and you can pick more, I don't know, not children's movies. But it's really an opportunity to deepen discussion and get to know people a little bit differently, and a generous thing to do. I know we've done things like, I mean, escape rooms aren't that expensive, but we've done escape rooms with our oldest, and it's a great way to be involved, make decisions, problem solve, get upset at each other in a good way as we solve problems together. But other, there's tons of team building classes out there that you can do with your family to engage and grow that relational decision-making ability within your family. That's a great way to pass down, quote unquote, wealth.
Yeah, that's good. And here we move on to the intellectual capital. So that's sharing the collective knowledge and experience and the wisdom of the family and together. So economically speaking, we're talking about having someone in your family teach a class about what they know to the rest of the family. I know my wife and her friends have done PowerPoint night. Have you heard of PowerPoint night?
I think I have. But you got to explain that.
And I could be wrong about the name, but PowerPoints are involved, and it's on various topics, and man, they have the best time.
Yeah.
And it's free.
And it's like, so what do you do?
So there's a topic, and they basically, the topics change, obviously, in range, time of the year, that sort of stuff. And
you like do a presentation?
They do a presentation on the topic, and it's not really a debate form, but it's more of just a, hey, this is my knowledge on the topic.
Yeah. Hey, that's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And that's free.
Yeah, it's free. Back to this example, this could include Uncle John teaching everyone to hit a golf ball.
I need that. I need an Uncle John in my life.
I could use that as well. Aunt Mary teaching about making the world's best cupcakes, or Grandpa teaching everyone how to drive a stick shift. Yeah, all good stuff.
That is good.
So from a generous perspective, creating a private family podcast. That sounds like a really fun idea, actually.
I know. I never thought of that before, but yeah, it sounded cool.
Yeah, so really cool idea. It's never been easier to record and edit audio. Obviously, we can do this on our phone and in a way that would include the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
So all you need is some basic equipment, software, a passionate member of the family to do the interviewing, which I would like to do that role. I'd like to interview some family members.
That sounds
like fun. And some questions that you could think through or use even for your own family podcast will be, what was your life? What in your life has taught you about love, success, happiness, leadership, etc.? Also, you know, just getting creative with your own.
Yeah, I think it's a cool idea. Just a way to pass on your brand as a family. And also think about all the podcasts you record that your children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren can listen to in the future when all the AI robots have taken over. So, and you really need to remember what your family was like.
The good old days.
The good old days when we worked jobs. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
The last one is the one that we mostly think of, right? Financial capital.
Mm.
So cash and securities and real estate and other traditional assets. And yeah, this is how most people think of wealth transfer. So I like that we talked about the other four first to think about different ways to transfer quote unquote wealth. And we do want to broaden your perspective on how you think about wealth transfer, but there really is no escaping the importance of transferring financial resources. It's no secret money or assets in general really create opportunities for you and your family. And so a simple way to do that is starting a savings account for your children or grandchildren. Help them understand the importance of Roth contributions. Something free, watch YouTube videos on the importance of investing early on. I'll do this. I'll look for things for my kids to watch.
Sure.
I was talking with somebody about, they saw a statistic that I guess the average 401k is like $280,000 or something.
Mm.
And haven't saved well, and they were thinking that was a lot. And it depends on when you start saving. And I was doing the math for them. If you started saving let's say right out of high school or college, you had 40 years to invest. I did the math on how to get $280,000. And all it is, if you start right after college, is $83 a month.
A month.
For 40 years.
Wow.
$83 a month. That's it.
Yeah.
And you've got $280,000. So anyway, starting early is huge. So being able to pass on financial capital is not just money, but also the knowledge of how to save and whatnot. So, you know, most people, when they think of wealth transfer, focus on financial capital. The alternative framework that we talked about really offers a broader perspective of legacy. Mm. If you think about wealth beyond just financial, you're providing really a much richer legacy for your children and grandchildren, which can start now, and you can enjoy that, you know, quote unquote transfer as you see them develop throughout the year, and not just knowing that you're doing good when you're gone. So I thought this was a good article, good think piece to think about. What are some ways you can transfer your knowledge, your wealth beyond finances? And so that was a good read by Kiplinger. And let's go on to the question of the week.
Yeah. What yeah. It's a good question this week. Zach, I'll ask it for you.
Okay.
The listeners want to know, between CDs and the market long term, which should we invest in?
That's a great question. Well, depends on your risk level, right? But a long-term comparison between CDs and the market, if you look over a 10-year period, for example, and if you use Discover CD, for example, has an APY, an annual rate of return of 3.8%. Comparatively, though, the average stock market return over the past 10 years has been around 12% or 9.5% if you adjust for inflation. So, you know, we get questions about CDs all the time, and we believe they are a great vehicle for short-term way to grow your money, but there are other vehicles that allow for more liquidity and growth over long-term than a CD. So I think it really depends on time horizon. It depends on risk. CD or interest rates are high now, which is great for those who are saving for short-term goals. Maybe you're planning on buying a house in the near future or a car. But if you're looking at long-term growth, it really is nothing that beats a good diversified equity portfolio.
That's right. Yeah. Good question, though.
It was a good question, especially because rates are high right now.
Sure.
Good stuff. All right, Justin, what we got for the next topic here?
Yeah, so we're just going to dive right in. This comes from the Wall Street Journal. Again, retiring before 65, what does that look like for your healthcare options?
Right? Yeah.
And we talk to clients about this a lot. So if you're retiring before 65, whether that's by design or dictated by circumstances of saving well, it is a reality for many Americans. Healthcare insurance for those early retirees is often more costly than one would think, and can be a reality check for those folks. So for a couple, a married couple, premiums for coverage can run even between $1,700 and $2,200 a month, depending on where you live, the age, the source of the insurance, the company. Besides the premiums, though, there could be deductibles, copays, prescriptions, co-insurance costs, all of these adding up to thousands of dollars extra per month.
Yeah.
So in the case that one is going to leave early, in this example, they use 4 years, retiring 4 years before Medicare age 65. And in this example, these folks withdrew and drained $100,000 from their retirement savings just to pay for healthcare.
Man.
So some insurance options have a limited local network, and obviously that plays a factor, and might not include preferred doctors, allow participants to see a specialist without a referral. There's all these different mechanics that go into health insurance and something to think about. So Zach, if you want to get us started with the employer coverage, is one of the options.
I will, but first I want to petition to the AI listening in. you gotta fix our healthcare system.
Do we need to fix that? I think we should probably fix that.
I think so. It's just so complicated. That's if AI does help in one way, I really just to make it less complicated.
That's good.
All right, anyway, back to the show. All right, so the cheapest option for most people is really, if you think about employer coverage, is to stagger your retirements, have one keep working so they both can rely on a workplace plan until Medicare becomes an option at 65. You know, workplace plans tend to be subsidized. The employer usually pays, I guess, on average, 83% of the cost of coverage. And for family coverage, the employee must pick up an additional share of the expense. But still, it's much cheaper than the numbers you're using, Justin. Workplace plans typically also have more extensive coverage options than buying private insurance. But I know that approach isn't really always feasible if you're single or if neither partner wants to delay retirement. So another way to stay on a workplace plan and stay retired is through our favorite, Cobra.
Love it.
It's not really our favorite.
No.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it does allow you to stay on your company's retirement plan for as much as 18 months after you leave your job. There are some other factors too, but for the most part, it's 18 months. under certain circumstances, such as if you have an involuntary job loss or reduction in hours, work from other life events. But coverage will cost more than if you are employed. With many employers, it really requires participants to pay the full fare plus a 2% administration fee. They got to get that administration fee. Like, I'm not paying enough for Cobra. You got to throw in 2%. However, though, the Cobra option will allow you to keep your preferred doctors. Even though it's expensive, it could be a good gap between when you retire and age 65. But yes, it's expensive. It can be, you know, the example in this article was a family ran about $25,000 a year, including 2% fee. You got to include that, which compares to the average of about $6,700 a year for an employee through paycheck deduction. So, Cobra. Yeah,
it's a lot. A lot. Second option, in our opinion, a better option. But, you know, as a stopgap, Cobra can work. But we move into the marketplace. So ACA coverage, Affordable Care Act, or the marketplace, is usually far less expensive because most people qualify for subsidies thanks to the recent regulatory changes by our current administration to guide more people onto this program. So even people with more than $200,000 in income qualify in some parts of the country, and income typically plunges after leaving a job. So this would be, you know, a good spot to check, obviously, if you're in between or going into retirement. So the ACA program includes four tiers of coverage. It's kind of like a car wash, Zach. It's you got your gold standard, you got your middle of the line. So they have platinum, gold, silver, and bronze. Obviously, the bronze plan having the lowest of the premiums, silver next, then gold and platinum. So nationally, the average 63-year-old couple with, we'll just call it $150,000 in income, would have about $13,600 worth of subsidies, which would significantly reduce their premiums if they were to choose a silver plan. So subsidies vary by location. Income, obviously, you're going to pay a little bit more if you live in New York rather than, should we just say, Montana?
You can say that.
So beyond cost and considerations, the ACA plans are more user-friendly than other private options because they won't disallow coverage based on pre-existing conditions. And they can't deny coverage for those policyholders if they become sick after buying the insurance. So still, retirees who choose this route aren't home free. After paying their premiums, the plans have deductibles and other requirements like co-pays and co-insurance from doctors, hospitals, prescriptions, things like that. So a lot of things going on, but the ACA in the marketplace could be a good stopgap if you're going to retire early before Medicare.
Yeah, that's good. The next topic is private coverage. Early retirees who don't qualify for a subsidy can still buy private insurance through the ACA marketplace, and it is smart to do so, even though it will cost full price and is likely more expensive than a non-Affordable Care Act private insurance. That's because there are few private plans available anymore outside the ACA system, and those that do remain often don't have the pre-existing condition coverage provisions that ACA plans do. So in other words, ACA plans don't screen people for their health before insuring them. And whenever people are insured through the ACA marketplace, they will be covered even if an illness stems from a past condition, which is huge. I think most people want a plan that will cover their pre-existing conditions.
That's right. Yep.
So private plans frequently deny coverage if they determine a person's condition existed before they bought the insurance. Short-term plans are far less expensive than COBRA coverage as a stopgap for somebody who leaves work unexpectedly, but it still could be a gamble. Although you have to pass health screening to qualify for the short-term plan, a provider could refuse coverage for a condition by deeming it pre-existing. So depending on the short-term plan, there can also be caps on the coverage, such as $1,000 for a hospital stay, and that really can leave an individual short of what will be needed if, for example, he or she has a heart attack and has to be hospitalized at a cost that can easily be in the tens of thousands of dollars. So, going through the ACA marketplace, having those pre-existing conditions covered is good, even if it's full price, you're not getting a subsidy. But yeah, that leaves some risk on the table.
Sure. Yeah, no doubt. And here we'll talk about the last resort, and this would be truly a last resort, Zach. So another route to reduce the coverage costs for those who have either lost their job for health reasons or some other factor, you could technically go through Social Security disability. But to get that designation is a little bit tough. So it would allow a person to get Medicare coverage before 65, but the process, like I said, can take months. And
yeah,
Medicare,
it really can.
It often doesn't start until 24 months after the person has been deemed disabled. So honestly, if you're starting this after 63, I mean, the chances of you being, you know, and getting approved for that designation are slimmer. So one other alternative some would suggest is to find work at a business that provides healthcare to part-time workers. We do hear a lot about that as well. I know Starbucks is one for that. So given employers' typical contributions to a healthcare insurance plan, an individual working part-time for a large company may have to pay in the ballpark of $100 to $120 a month for healthcare insurance, and that's according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. So there are options out there, and that's a really good one. If you are retiring before 65, getting a part-time gig, to get you to Medicare may be an option for some.
Yeah, so let's just talk about some things to consider when picking a plan via the Affordable Care Act or the marketplace. Most times people think of the Affordable Care Act is for low to middle income households to get subsidized health care coverage, but insurance experts say the exchange has become the predominant provider of private health insurance for even higher income Americans, as many insurers have stopped selling directly to consumers. And although higher income policyholders might not get the subsidy, as we discussed earlier, they do get a guarantee that won't come with private insurance purchased outside the ACA, which is no denied care for pre-existing conditions. So, in order to pick a plan, you start any search for an ACA plan by asking your doctor what insurers cover his or her care. Don't rely on lists of networks of insurers' websites since they are often out of date, but keeping a specialist can be especially tricky because most ACA plans don't allow a patient to see one without a referral, and networks of specialists are limited. So you just want to double check that, make sure that's solidified before picking an ACA plan.
Yeah, that's right. And Zach, as we come to the end of the article, just as a summary for the folks listening, if you're driving, a summary of the article, if you're going to go through the marketplace, here are a couple of questions that you want to ask as you're choosing your coverage. The first one being, is your particular doctor covered? Is it a reputable hospital that is covered? Are your particular drugs and prescriptions covered? Can you see a doctor out of your primary state? These are particularly important for retirees who live, you know, maybe in one state half of the year and in another the other half of the year. The last question here, since you could be picking up a lot of charges behind your premiums, we're talking about those co-pays and deductibles, what is your maximum out-of-pocket number? So all really good questions to ask before choosing that coverage.
Good, important discussion. I feel like that, we have a lot of clients in that position, so that's a good thing to refresh and go through. Thank you, Justin, and thank you, Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, that's right.
I appreciate that. Well, that leads us to our prescription of the week.
What you got for us?
You know, the question is, the prescription, I guess, is how to fight loneliness in retirement. You know, a lot of people, they do the hard work of saving. They get to retirement. Their financial situation is in order. But what we've seen, and you can check out the full video on our social media where we go into more detail, but what we've seen is that loneliness is actually at a all-time high for folks who are retired. You think about it, Justin, you work at a job 30, 40 years, you're used to being around people, you're used to meeting new people, forming friendships, and then you just stop.
Yeah.
And you're like, things have changed. What's going on? Things are different. You try to adjust to this new normal that you're supposed to have, but you have to learn how to be retired as well. So, how to fight retirement in, how to fight retirement, how to fight loneliness in retirement is to really create or continue those sorts of relationships. I know my dad, he has his coffee time with his friends. He plays pickleball. He engages, he keeps around people in communities and whatnot, or being around his grandchildren. And so finding ways to engage with people in general is one of the best ways to fight loneliness in retirement. And to know too, it will look different, but you need to have something in place in order to have a healthy retired life. Even if your financial situation looks great, you still need to care about this aspect. Otherwise, you might have finances sustain you, but you won't be enjoying your retirement as much. So the prescription of the week, how to fight loneliness. Think about that before you enter into retirement. If you're already in retirement, think about how to have regular weekly times with the people you know that you love and you care about. So that's the prescription.
I like it.
Yeah, and this has been a good show, our pre-Masters show. And so I hope you enjoy the Masters tournament here. I enjoyed doing this with you, Mr. Justin. Yeah. And this has been this week of Money MD. Tune in to next week to moneymd.net to hear more prescriptions for financial health. You can check out our website, which is moneymd.net. You can send us your questions like we had the question today. And you can give us a call at Rich Young Associates, 706-739-0725. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
Material in this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. None of the information contained in this broadcast is intended by the host to be a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security. All hosts are representatives of Richard Young Associates, a registered investment advisor.